Okay, thank you. Hello, everyone. It's good to see so many faces on the last section of the conference. This is surprisingly for me. And okay, my name is Thiago Santos. I work for Intel Corporation in Finland. I'm a software engineer, currently working with browser technologies. So we're going to talk about hardening WebKit, so making it more secure. So let's say you're surfing on the web, accessing, browsing, and so I've seen many talks before mine talking about new features we have on the browsers nowadays. And we can mention, for example, many browsers are capable of accessing the file system, right? It might be either for storing cookies, you have a IndexedDB, you have a SQL database, you have a web storage. So, but the problem is, what if you are accessing a website? It might be the case that you are accessing the, let's say, the undergrounds of the internet for some reason, or might be the case that you are accessing a website that you trust, but this website is now compromised. It happens a lot. For example, my friends, they forget about updating WordPress. And so the website is compromised and is now serving malware, or the website is trying to exploit a vulnerability on your browser and take over your browser. Right? That can happen, and that happens. So the situation is bad because if your browser has direct access to your file system, so the exploit, the attacker might just fetch your data, your documents, and upload it to somewhere in the internet. You know, steal your data, confidential information. So that's the problem we are going to try to solve here today. So this talk is basically about WebKit, security on Linux. Okay, I'm not covering any other operating system, just Linux. And when I'm talking about Linux, I'm not exactly talking about Tizen. Tizen has different mechanisms to enforce security, like Ryan, his Mac, Ryan, his guys are doing a pretty good job at it. But additional security maybe can help. So WebKit. For those who are not familiar, WebKit is a rendering engine. It's a browser engine. It takes the contents of the website, the HTML. WebKit has also a JavaScript engine inside it. So it takes the contents of the website and make it beautiful. Displays, shows something on the screen. So we are going to talk today of WebKit 2. Not exactly. It's a different version of the WebKit API. I'm going to talk about this a little bit later, but it's good to know that WebKit for Linux, it's available in three different flavors, which is Qt, EFL, and GTK. WebKit 2 currently also works on Safari, but this talk, again, is about Linux and WebKit. So I'm covering only Qt, EFL, and GTK. And by the way, EFL is the technology behind the Tizen browser and the Tizen web runtime. Okay, so back to what is WebKit 2. WebKit 2 adds a process model on WebKit, which is you have a separate process showing things on the screen, which we can call it's like your browser, and we have another process we call it web process, which is actually the process fetching things from the internet, rendering the website, and then using IPC, it gives it to the UI process, so the UI process shows the website to the user. So what are the advantages of that? You can see, for example, if you have a browser with several tabs, if one of the tabs crashes for some reason, the browser is still alive. So you can recover that tab somehow, maybe reload. Back on the days when the browser was completely monolithic, if one of the tabs had a bug, it basically had to restart the browser, right? So that's what is WebKit 2. It's a process model on top of WebKit. It's a new API, basically. Okay. But that's good. But the web process, again, the process fetching things from the internet, rendering your website, executing JavaScript, it still has access to the file system. And as I said, it's fetching things from the internet, so it has access to the network. So it's a lot of responsibilities for a process, right? Especially a process that it's executing things coming from the internet. The WebKit developers are doing a pretty good job, and they are making it the architecture even more modular. So nowadays we have also it's still under development for Linux. It's not stable yet. We have another process, the network process. So every time you type a website on the browser, the UI process sends a message to the web process and say, "Hey, I want to load this website." The web process makes a request to the network process that accesses the internet. But on Linux, that's great, right? You have less capabilities, less responsibilities on the web process. But on Linux, the web process can do syscalls, all the syscalls. So nothing stops a compromised web process to bind a socket and access the network anyway. Even though you have a separate process taking care of the network requests, if the web process is compromised, it can do every syscall. So it can bind a socket, can listen for incoming connections. So it's useless, right? Having a separate process in this case in terms of security. So how do we solve that? There's one way. First of all, we assume that the web process is always compromised. As soon as you touch the internet, you are compromised. We have to assume that because even though you might trust a website, as I said, you are reading your colleague's blog, you trust that your colleague is not spreading virus and he doesn't want to hack the world, but he's running an old version of a WordPress, and it's now serving malware or has some JavaScript that can exploit your browser. So we start with this assumption. And then we drop capabilities. So the web process should not access file system. To put it differently, the web process should do the minimal amount of syscalls possible. For example, memory allocation is fine, But the web browser should not be able to remove files on your file system. It should not be able to open files. But it needs to. It needs to, because what if a website is using web storage and requests and wants to save some data on the disk? So for that, we create a separate process. I'm calling it broker process. It's a gatekeeper. And it has an IPC connection with this web process. So every time you want to do something that is sensitive, let's say opening a file on the file system, you ask the broker process, because the broker process is trusted. It doesn't have the broker process doesn't have contact with the outside world. Okay, you trust that. So let's say in this case, I have an example of some rules. The web process, I'm calling these policies file system policies. So the web process, this particular instance of the web process has access to your home folder, .browser.example.com. Read and write. Usually, ideally, it should store all the databases there. And your browser might want to read the configurations. So I'm saying there that the defaults.conf has read access. For rendering websites, you might need to access and load some fonts, system fonts. So in this example, you have access to the user share fonts, read only. And everything else from the root folder is not allowed. So a compromised web process is still can read the database of that particular website, but nothing else. It can read the configuration of your browser default configuration, but again, nothing else. But this has to be enforced, right? We need some mechanism to enforce this. So here I'm introducing second filters. It's a kernel mechanism for filtering syscalls. And it happened to be a pretty good tool to create a sandbox. The idea of the second filters is very simple. You create a list of syscalls you want to block. And that's it, nothing else. But you can trap the syscalls. For example, I say this process is not allowed to do the open syscalls, the open syscall. So when it happens, I have a handler for it. So I can inspect the parameters and say, okay, you're trying to do open, but I'm not allowed. So what I do? I send a message to the broker process and say, hey, broker process, I'm trying to open this file, but I cannot do that. What do you think about it? And then the broker process, you see, I have a list of policies here. Let me see. Okay, you can do that. You cannot do that. But I can do that in your behalf. And then the broker process executes the syscall and sends the file descriptor back to the web process. Any questions so far about this? You?
Apart from using this broker process, did you consider using containers for it? Because for me, it's like a fun classical application for containers.
No. I haven't thought about using containers. And the idea of this, it's a complementary secured mechanism. For example, you can have this and have these Mac labels at the same time. So, And the idea is to be zero conf. So it should run.
Check.
It should run on every Linux distribution out of the box. The reason being because seconf filters is now available on the Linux kernel starting from 3.5. But some Linux distributions, notable Ubuntu, backport the patches, and since 12.04, it is available. Seconf filters was not meant for that. Microphone for you.
So you were telling that you're applying the seconf filter on the of this broker process. Have you considered applying the filter directly on this web? I forgot how it was, web process.
So the seconf filters is applied to the web process. The process.
But why you can't encode the rules already to the filter?
The rules are in the broker process.
But why you can't set up the rules properly for the web process already? Because you probably, I mean, you set up the broker process kind of individually. If I understood, you set up it individually per web process. So you can say that, okay, this web process, well, this broker process attached to that web process is able to access these rules. So you can as well set up the seconf filter with the proper rules directly. Or am I missing some details, implementation details?
Could you repeat, please?
I just don't understand why you don't use. So you set up the filter on the web process, the seconf filter. But you still, for what purpose you need a broker process? Because you can set up.
It's a limitation of seconf. The filters are very limited. You cannot say you can open this path. It doesn't accept path as an input, because every parameter of a system call is it depends on the architecture, but it's 32 bits, 64 bits.
But the chopping.
So it's for example, when you do open, the file path is what the kernel gets. It's a pointer to the string that has the file path. So we cannot really have a filter saying everything inside user share fonts is allowed. Because what I was about to say is seconf filters was meant initially just for filtering syscalls. The thing about creating a sandbox on top of it, one may say is a hack. I call it nice engineering.
No, it's not really hack. It's just more finer, kind of specifying finer rules. So you're not just saying that you can access or can't access, can call F open or not, but you can kind of do it on this restricted path. So I would think that. But if for example, if you can do this more fine grained rules on a filter and kind of. If that would be advanced, then you don't need all this broker process, isn't it?
The second filter, again, it's based on the Berkeley packet filtering. You cannot really have a filter rule with strings, for example, or wildcards saying everything inside user share is allowed.
I understood that part. I'm just thinking that the right way probably with seconf and a future continuum would be that the guys actually would allow this either trapping done directly or kind of making more modular, because when it can be used for this kind of use cases directly, you don't need to spawn one more process which will do all this rule shuffling.
Well, but for example, if you make the filters in the web process and the web process is compromised, how can you trust the filters?
Because but you can set up the filters before. You can set up the filters before it's spawned.
Yes, but how do you trust the policies?
But you can set up the filters and the policies. If you could do that, you could set up the filters and the policies before you spawn the web process, and then it could get compromised, but it's not allowed to modify it anymore.
Yeah, but how do you prevent the process to modify the policies?
It's not loading seconf filters doesn't require any capability?
No.
At all?
No. For loading the filters, no. After it's loaded, you cannot unload, right?
Yeah, so this is...
But the problem is the policy. If the code that is checking the policies is inside the same memory space process that is compromised, you cannot really trust if the policy wasn't compromised.
I understand that part. I was just thinking with, like, if we can redesign a bit the SEMP comp and extend it.
That would be great.
I'm saying that would be greater for your use case because you don't need all this broker process anymore, because this is like you have to do that because the SEMP comp, you can't use it properly. So
there are another solution going this direction in the kernel. It's a sandbox, more or less like they have on, I think, OpenBSD. I forgot the name. You remember this? FreeBSD. It's a sandbox similar to the what they have on Mac. The Google guys are trying to push this into the Linux kernel, I heard. No. Okay. Anyway. So as I mentioned before, it works like this. The web process, let's say you have a website that wants to store something in a database. So we have to do an open syscall, open the database file. But you're not allowed to do that, and SecComp enforces that. So what happens is the syscall is delegated to the broker process, and the broker process will check against some rules, some policies. If it is allowed, the broker process will execute the syscall for you and send you back the results. So this is pretty much how it works for every syscall that is trapped. But you might say that this is slow. Imagine you're doing a syscall. It has to go to another process. The another process will check and, okay, yes, no, send it back to you. There is a message passing, serialization, a lot of things going on. And it is slow. In fact, is on my test, is 28 times slower. Orders of magnitude, but I could do 15,000 opens using with this mechanism going to the broker process and back in almost half a second. So it's acceptable because WebKit is not a file manager. For opening a website, it takes 200 files, I think. Loading fonts and shared libraries and cache and things like that. So it will definitely not be a bottleneck. And another thing is we don't trap all the syscalls, just the entry points. For example, if you want to access a database, you do open. But after you get the file descriptor and you want to do I/O, read and write, we don't trap that because if you have access to the file system, to that file descriptor, you can read and write, no problem. You got the access on the entry point. So ideally, we should trap and send it to the broker process. Just things like open, unlink, rename, create directory, remove directory. So it's still under development, so we are building a list of things that we would like to delegate to the trusted process. SecComp filter is upstream. If you download the latest version of WebKit, you get it for free, but it's not enabled by default. As I said, it only works on Linux. So it's right now you can try it on on Qt and EFL, and I have a patch for enabling it for GTK. It's ongoing. Hopefully, is Martin Robinson here? He might review my patch soon. Okay, and basically you just need to pass the parameter in minus minus second filters. And there is a link for a white paper, some documentation, design document, and stuff like that on that website. Okay. So, questions? Anyone? You? And just a second. I'll be glad to demo how it works. I have it running on my laptop, and clarify any other, let's say, architectural designs. Okay, explain a little bit more about SecComp and other stuff. Carry on.
I have two questions. One is, I think in some of the Pornium exploits, or in the Chromium exploits, they actually managed to exploit the UI process. So how likely do you think it is that you could do something so that the broker process gets compromised?
Yes, that's true. The broker process holds has all the capabilities, right? If you manage to exploit the IPC layers, let's say you create a specially crafted message to the broker process and exploit the broker process, it makes it harder. That's the point. It's not a local exploit anymore. It's a remote exploit. You have first to exploit the web process and, again, somehow exploit the broker process. Just make it harder, but not impossible, right?
And the other question regarding comparison to Chromium is as well, the web process in Chromium has less, like, doesn't do any file system access at all. Everything goes over IPC. So do you think WebKit is moving that direction to kind of more contain file system access in the web process?
Yeah, I have it here. So what Dominic's saying is, this is how it works on WebKit. The web process, for example, SQLite. If you want to store something in the database, SQL database, the backend is SQLite. So what happens on WebKit 2 is, the web process links with SQLite, and it has direct access to the file system. On Chromium, it's a little bit different. On Chromium, it has a virtual platform, and everything is done in a trusted in the UI process via IPC. Answering your question, I don't see that WebKit 2 going this direction, because this model here works just fine for Apple and the sandbox you have on macOS. So obviously, having an IPC layer makes it more difficult to write the code, right? So they don't need that, because they don't have the intention to support multiple OSs. Any more questions?
Is this actually available in some version of Tizen, or is this just a planned thing? Or?
No. Well, it's under development. If it reaches to a point that it might be useful for Tizen, I would be glad to help the Tizen developers, platform developers to ship it. But primarily, I think Smack is the sandbox for Tizen.
Okay, but so you're just working on pushing it to WebKit then at this
point?
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, so no more questions. Thank you.